Welcome to episode 1.3 of part 1 of The Warp and Woof. I'm your host, Grover Elliott, and I'm covering my third defining characteristic. I am a husband. In everything I do, I must consider the thoughts and feelings of another. Well, of course I have to, because none of us are alone here. But specifically, I must consider the thoughts and feelings of one to whom I voluntarily gave my solemn word and honor. An obligation of no small order. So what does it mean to be a spouse? Well, for me, it means I gave up motorcycles and living with access to the master bathroom. Just kidding. But it does mean compromise and sacrifice for another to whom I have ceded some of my individual wants, desires, and decisions. Well, why? Because we've committed to be partners, and partners do not operate in a vacuum. Though the missus does use one at my command. Another joke, just want to make sure the feminists were listening. What is a partnership? Let's look at the definition. I like this one from Merriam-Webster. A relationship resembling a legal partnership and usually involving close cooperation between parties having specified and joint rights and responsibilities. I don't like that partnership, the word, is in the definition for the word partnership, but I think it gives us a good start. Listen to this definition of marriage from the same source. The state of being united as spouses in a consensual and contractual relationship recognized by law. Now, some of you may have issues with this right off the bat. Does it have to be consensual? What if one of us wasn't old enough to enter into a contract? The current laws don't allow me to marry my partner. Are you still holding on to that antiquated concept of marriage? All right, I'm not here to debate the definition, legality, or practicality of marriage. I'm just giving you some definitions that I think do a pretty good job at establishing the appropriate level of gravity to the subject. The point is, a marriage, any marriage, is a serious partnership. It requires commitment by both parties. It requires sacrifice. Or as Jessica White said, marriage is a wonderful thing, but you get a lot of little things with it. It's not perfect. There's love in it. There's happiness in it. There's sorrow, hatred, and madness in it. I think what our folk hero was expressing is that marriage, any partnership, takes hard work and commitment. It seems that these days, perhaps one or both of those is lacking to a great degree for many marriages, or what should be marriages. Statistics mongers like to throw around the 50% of all marriages end in divorce, though I'm not sure that's limited to couples under the age of 30, plus a lot of those divorces end up in subsequent marriages. But why do we get married? If you're married, why? What are some of the reasons? Well, it might be companionship, we're in love, we're having a baby, or we want to make a family, or because the government wants a more efficient way to track us, subjugate us, and keep us tucked away in neat little rows of tax meat. Those are a few reasons. Perhaps you have another. To become a citizen, avoid deportation. His parents are loaded, or her dad's shotgun was loaded. I know a guy who got married just to spite another girl who dumped him. We all have our own reasons, good and bad. But what's at the bottom of it? If you're like me, my first time, I was looking for that person who completed me, who gave my life a centered purpose, who put lights and stars in my eyes, or some such garbage from song and film. I guess to some extent, we're all looking for that someone who fulfills our wants and desires and makes us feel good about ourselves. Well, good luck. It wasn't always like that. In fact, it wasn't like that through most of human history. We've only gotten fat and spoiled enough to dreamily search for those qualities in the last 100 years at best, the last 50 years or so for the most. Here in America, we like to be indignant about arranged marriages, looking at them as barbaric modern practices or subjects of scorn in historical pieces about our own land. The rancher's daughter pressed to marry the banker's son. The curly-headed prince, forced to marry the cold princess he doesn't love instead of the angelic chambermaid. Or the young foreign couple who were betrothed as toddlers. We hate that kind of thing in this country. But that's the way it was. And for very good reason. In fact, you were manipulated into hating those conditions through late 19th century and early 20th century romance novels. We don't even have to tax our imaginations to look back on that time period. Look back at the generation in your family that got married in the 1940s or earlier. If you were able to spend time around them as a couple, you likely don't remember seeing any public displays of affection. They likely spoke in terms of work, chores, and death. There wasn't a lot of squishy talk or discussions about dreams and such between them. That wasn't because they gave up on all of that or that they were somehow too refined to speak of such things. It's because marriages were more realistic back then. Your grandfather, great-grandfather, whatever, had a solid job or some land and worked hard. His spouse could cook and keep the house in order. Sure, they courted and loved each other, but they likely hadn't made a yearly trip to Sandals together and chosen a name for their second kid before they tied the knot. They got married because it made sense. Personal feelings were hopefully mutual, but they were a team to survive. Go back another generation or so, and you'll see even that little bit less important. The fact is, survival was tough. People had to create their own food and their own clothing and their own shelter for the most part in most places just over 150 years ago. Husbands didn't have time to gaze into their wives' eyes and recite poetry. At best, they read a few verses from the Bible under the lamplight as his sturdy wife darned his one pair of socks, stained from a day of pig slop turning, her hands calloused from killing a chicken and scrubbing cast iron. Married life was full of hard, hard work. And having children was a necessity just to create a workforce to help with the daily grind of chores and survival. I'm not saying I'm pining away for those times. Thank God, by no credit of my own, I was born in a place and time where that isn't necessary in order to survive. When we're choosing a potential spouse, we don't have to be preoccupied with considerations of survival, other than as a species, but not individually. But it seems that fact means to people that all work is out of marriage, and nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, today's situation really creates the need for more work in some ways. Back then, hard physical labor reduced the energy to argue at night, and there was no opportunity to complain about what to watch on TV, the color to paint the living room, or even to paint the living room. No arguing over her wasting money buying worthless stuff like matching formal dinnerware, or her complaints when he invested so wisely in a fine set of shotguns and shooting attire. We have any number of things to argue about today. Our lives are so comparably easy that we have the energy to do so. And we spend so much time together that we have the opportunity to find any cause of disagreement, no matter how insignificant. I think the problem is this. No one is going to complete you. There is no magical Disney ending. Most of us will never live in a castle with a stable hand to love us passionately and completely. We're going to get married, have a kid or three, work hard for a meager retirement, and pray that Social Security sees us through to the inevitable end. And you're probably going to live until 75 or 80 years of age instead of 45. That's today's reality. And it makes it that more important to make sure you find the right person. And you do that by tempering your expectations and accepting that it will take a lot of hard work. Find someone you get along with. Have some common interests to pursue, but have some differing interests that allow you time apart. Time with friends. Date long enough to know their family. She will look like her mother and he will act like his dad. If he hates his mother or she hates her father, there better be a darn good reason. Have convergent goals. work, kids, living location, that type of thing. Talk about religion. Make decisions about religion. Likewise about kids. And money, money, money. This is the biggest problem most couples face. Things that don't matter. Breast size, hair thickness, the car they drive. Things you're told don't matter, but really do. Their family background, the job they have, the money they make, the amount of debt they carry, their prospects for the future. Marriage is a lot of hard work. Money can eliminate some problems. If it's already there, there's one less thing to worry about. I was given this advice. It's just as easy to fall in love with a rich person as it is with a poor person. Of course, I'm hard-headed, so yeah. Well, we worked for years to get somewhat comfortable. Having lived through many ranges of the economic spectrum, it's easy to recognize that life and marriage are more peaceful without having to worry about the source of the next meal or rent payment. Now, I'm not saying there's no love or romance in marriage. There should be both. And we live in an easy time that we can concentrate on those. Just remember that marriage still requires a heck of a lot of hard work. The other thing it requires is commitment. And I'm not sure how common that is in this day of quote-unquote enlightened relationships. Easy divorces, shack-ups, and men who like to come and go. Listen, you self-described gigolos are not impressive. Anyone can be exciting the first time or outside of a seemingly stale marriage, especially when you don't have to stick around to feed the kids in the morning after you've, well, whatever. Try turning a woman on for the 350th time. After she's washed the dishes, and after you've just changed a green poo-filled diaper for the third time in an hour, all while both of you are waiting for the kid to wake up screaming. That's a challenge, not what you do, gigolo. And shacking up? You're just using another person at your convenience for your own selfish gain. Just like all those healthy people who refuse to work but exist by panhandling and preying on the better angels of others' natures, you're a sex bomb. A homeless relationship squatter, waiting for something better. No, something different to come along. As soon as things get tough, you bail. And for your so-called enlightened relationships, we're above the institution of marriage. We love each other, and that's all that counts. It's our thing. How selfish is that? Give your child a last name. That's a legal reason to get married. And again, it's only a thing as long as it's a thing. Get married in your church. If your church won't let you, go somewhere else. I did. Give your child a solid foundation. And give that same thing to your spouse, something they can count on. Invest in your relationship. Commit to it. Go all in. Let me put it another way. I play the guitar, but I'm no musician. There's a big difference. I can pop in and out. I can change instruments. I can quit. I can do the bare minimum and get by. I'm not heavily invested in it. In fact, it's just a fun pastime, nothing more. Oh, I like it. I'm passionate about it. Don't get me wrong. It makes me feel good. And when I get in the zone, it's the most important thing in the world to me. I spend a considerable amount of time fantasizing about being one of the greats. But really, there's no pressure on me. If something more fun comes along, I can put the old guitar in its case or hang it on the wall if I just want to pop in and out for a quickie here and there. And I can go play golf. If I was serious about it, I'd quit my job and commit everything to playing guitar. Make or break. This is the thing that is most important in my life. Me and my guitar against the world together. I hope you get my point. I'm not suggesting you quit your career or give up your dreams for marriage. That's the reason you get to know one another and talk about goals and direction. But commit. One final thought on this. As a husband, I no longer just represent myself in the world. I represent someone else. That affects how I do my job, how I live, how I dress, and how I take care of myself. Neither men nor women have a monopoly on letting themselves go once they get married, and that's wrong. Keep yourself up. Give your spouse something to be proud of being a part of. Who are you looking for? Have you found that person you want to spend the rest of your life with? How much are you willing to invest in that relationship? Stick around for the next episode when I'll cover what it means to me to be a father.